Another question or comment before we move on? Yes.
The Lord's Prayer that you led us in yesterday, yeah. Was that your paraphrase or what was that from?
Yeah, and do you have, there's secret, in Secret Message of Jesus, it's not in there.
It's available
in our books, sir. It's in the paperback version, but I put that chapter on my website.
Okay.
Basically, you know, you can just try to take the prayer and tease out the meaning a little bit. I'll give you a couple of thoughts. I'll say a couple of thoughts on the Lord's Prayer because it is a tragedy that first that some churches don't say it, and then that other churches say it on autopilot. Say it at a speed that is impossible for it to be. You can't bond to the meaning of it. Our Father in heaven is remarkable for a couple of reasons. First, because Jesus' distinctive use of the term Father to refer to God, and also our being bigger, not just my Father in heaven. But then immediately that intimacy of Father is followed up with Hallowed be thy name. Now, I'm not exactly sure how to capture this, but I'm pretty sure what Jesus is saying. When he uses name, he means the unspeakable name for God. And, you know, this is personal opinion, but I think we Protestants make a really big mistake by taking the YHWH, turning it into Yahweh, and then throwing that around like, oh, we know what it means, so we'll use it a lot. Because the whole idea of that word for the Jews is that it's too sacred to throw around. And I think part of what Jesus is saying is, we're calling you Father, intimate, but we're remembering that your name suggests something that is beyond our grasp. I mean, that dynamic tension is there. I also think there's a political dimension to that line. Hallowed be thy name, I think, also means you're the God of Israel. Israel is being oppressed by the Romans. And this is very relevant to what I'd like to talk about next. And it's a shame to your name for us to be oppressed. So I think to say hallowed be your name means we ought to be liberated from these Roman oppressors. It's a shame for the people of your name to be under them, because that flows right into may your kingdom come. Now, in my book, Secret Message of Jesus, I talk a lot about kingdom. There's a step, I want to make full disclosure here. There's a step I skip in that book. Step one is you read the word kingdom. Step two is you say, what did that mean for the original hearers? And step three means, what does it mean for us today? I do some on step two, but step two deserves a lot more spilling out. And I don't do that there. N.T. Wright does a good job of that. His fellow Andrew Perriman does a really good job of that. But I think may your kingdom come in context means may we be liberated from the Romans. May your will be done on earth as it is in heaven is I think, a Hebrew parallelism, which says kingdom is when God's will is done. The whole direction of the Lord's Prayer is down, what happens here on earth, not evacuation. And that, to me, are the two gospels that are at play in the world today. One is what a friend of mine calls the gospel of evacuation, and the other is the gospel of incarnation and transformation. And they're at play. Your kingdom come, your will be done. Give us today our daily bread. I translate that, sustain us with bread for today. But I think Jesus is evoking the manna in the wilderness with that prayer. And I think what and there's something very political about this, because the Roman Empire needs to keep amassing more and more land to increase its economic and military security. And Jesus is suggesting there's a kind of security that the people had walking through the wilderness where they trusted in God with no visible means of support to provide with them what they need that day. And I think part of what Jesus is saying is we're better off being dependent on God for our daily bread than being like the Romans who out of insecurity keep dominating other people. You might say, well, where do you get that? The Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, don't be like the Gentiles. Don't worry about what you will eat, what you will drink, what you will wear, which that section seems to me is almost an elucidation of this line of the prayer. All of these things the Gentiles seek or pursue, And it's the pursuit of what you will eat, what you will drink, what you will wear that has led the Romans to be in this acquisitive imperial mode, right? But then forgive us our sins. Well, for the Jews, that's the reason they're under Roman oppression, because they believe that they've been sinful and God has delivered them to their captors for not being obedient. But then as we forgive our debtors, this is this amazing twist that Jesus is calling for a relationship with the Roman Empire that's not a relationship of the zealots, let's fight them and kill them. And it's not a relationship of the Herodians and Sadducees, let's just get along with them and play their game. It's their wrong, forgive us our wrongs, we'll forgive them. It's very, very powerful. And of course that plays out in the sermon. Your Father in heaven lets the rain fall on the just and the unjust. Love your enemies. Very powerful, I think. Lead us not into temptation is the most difficult line of the prayer to interpret, I think. I'm not sure of this, but I think the best New Testament scholars agree, the word temptation is the wrong word. It creates theological problems, first of all, because James tells us God doesn't tempt anybody. Other people say it's not temptation, it's the time of trial. And so lead us not into the time of trial. I think specifically in Jesus' day, what he's saying is, God, save us from the disastrous situation of Israel going to war against Rome. If that happens, it's going to be terrible. Save us from that crazy temptation of going to war. Save us from the time of trial of going to war. But deliver us from evil, I think, and it's the evil. So a lot of people translate it the evil one, meaning the devil. I think probably what Jesus is saying is, please don't let us go to war with Rome, but please let us be liberated from the evil oppressor of Rome. And Satan is seen as being behind the forces of the Roman oppression. And then, of course, this is probably a textual addition later added, but the kingdom, the power, and the glory are yours is in direct contrast to Caesar has the kingdom, Caesar has the power, Caesar has the glory. And that political, somewhat political reading of the text is actually the perfect segue to what I'd like to talk about now.